Thank you, Jen.
Just want to welcome our friend Bobby Schmisco from Methacton. Bobby and I go into prison together for restorative justice, and Bobby has a natural gift for this type of ministry. I believe she would agree with that, that God has a calling on her for this special ministry. And how long have you been going, Bobby?
It'll be
4 years. 4 years. And the men always appreciate her point of view, because they don't often get a lady's point of view in there. And it's just been a real blessing for restorative justice, her being part of the team. So we want to welcome Bobby. She's going to tell us a little bit more about restorative justice.
Thanks. I think Eloise left to take care of the kids. I was going to mention to her that she was my anthropology professor at Eastern in the 90s. Oh, Alberta, I just saw you. I didn't see who was here. So I have a couple of connections with your church. Today, in a way, is a time of coming home, my journey to Greater Ford Prison, and ultimately to Phoenix, that it's called now, began here. Well, actually, it began in your fellowship hall, because I met there with Pastor Mike in 2016. I was finishing up my two-year program of study at Cairo School of Spiritual Formation to become a spiritual director. I was studying in order to meet with people one-on-one to become a spiritual director, to assist them in realizing a deeper spiritual connection to God. And I do that today. But I also wanted to use my skills and practice to serve people who are not often cared for. And I considered three groups of people: the dying, the elderly, and the imprisoned. And after sensing that God was calling me to minister to folks in prison, I then looked for someone who had an in. That is, someone who was already in the prison ministering or volunteering to get me in. And that's when I was directed to Mike Meneses. Apparently, he started the program at Greater Ford many years ago. And during two seasons of the year, I journey each Thursday evening, and sometimes on Saturdays and over the weekends, from my home in Sanatoga to Phoenix Prison. And as most of you know, Jake Lenz also is a dedicated volunteer there. In fact, I think he's been going for over 10 years, right, Jake? For over 10 years. We spend our time with the men who are, and they've committed murder and various other serious crimes, and they're now incarcerated in the maximum security prison. We're part of a program that offers several kinds of restorative justice workshops, and we shorten the name to RJ when we talk about it. RJ is not a religious program, although the book we use was written by a Christian. His name was Howard Zaire. He is considered one of the founders of this process of redemption and reconciliation and restoration. The point of the program is to end harm, to promote healing, to move people toward mutual respect, to recognize that the world is one big community, and to move people toward mutual responsibility. People often ask if I'm afraid when they find out that I go into a maximum security men's prison and spend time in a room with up to 16, 18, 20, and recently I was in a room full of 35, and we've also gone for the big programs where there's 75 men in the room, and there's no guard present. I always chuckle because I'm never afraid. I was not afraid from the first moment that I went in. And I love these men, and I know Jake does too. I love them the way God loves me. I believe when we're called to something, we are given all that we need for the work, and then there is no fear. Of course, we sang about that this morning. I feel as close to God when I walk in those prison doors as I feel anywhere else in the world. Love fills me and undergirds me and supports me as I move down the hallways and into the rooms and ultimately into the hearts of these men. We form a type of community in these RJ workshops, And the more we grow in genuine community, the closer we grow to God. And that needs to be our goal in the church, too. In fact, one person who's a close friend of mine calls my ministry my prison church. Did you ever feel that way, Jake? The prison church. Being with the men on Thursday evenings at SCI Phoenix is a time of hope and encouragement and transformation with people who are on the path to wholeness. And it isn't what the church is supposed to be on the path to wholeness too, all of us. When I met with Pastor Mike before I began my volunteer days at Phoenix, I gave him my spiel about wanting to be a volunteer as a spiritual director to individual men there. And after meeting for 3 hours, he smiled and said, "I hear what you're telling me, Bobby, that you would like to do, but would you consider praying about something else?" He went on to tell me about RJ. I agreed to go home and pray about it, and a week later, I felt sure that I was being called. And even though I had no idea what I would be doing at the prison, I stepped out in faith and accepted Mike's invitation. When I told my instructor at Kairos my plan, he said, "Well, after all, Bobby, restorative justice is a spiritual practice." I would like to tell you today that what Pastor Mike did for the men in the prison is possibly the best thing they will ever experience. The restorative justice programs are based on love for others, which follows the teaching of Jesus to love God above others and love others as ourselves. RJ at Phoenix Prison has expanded and is now under the auspices of Haverford College and is part of the Let's Circle Up program. The new leadership has been able to take the program to a new level of expansion, but maintains the original focus, which is to promote healing within the context of true community. The incarcerated men who are inside, who are the inside teams, they speak about how much they appreciate what Mike did for them. He is not forgotten, and personally, I am very grateful to Mike too. I have volunteered and ministered in many ways over the years, but this is the best thing I have ever done. Also, it is the first time I am not the leader, although I do occasionally help with facilitation. And so does Jake. We do this under duress, don't we, Jake? They want us to help out, but we just love being one with the group. We answer the same questions that they do, and we grow together in a bonded community in a very special way. The inside facilitators are imprisoned men, too. One of them is the director of the program, and he is a lifer. That is a person who has been sentenced to death by incarceration. I used to train small group facilitators for my church work years ago, and I've been so impressed with what great facilitators these men are. They are using their gifts to change the world on the inside of the prison, and I learn from them every time we meet. RJ is a program that uses circle process or group process to form community, which is the best way for people to learn to heal and to care for others and to become known. In genuine community, people can work out the everyday issues as well as the difficulties of their lives. And we have a beautiful picture of genuine community in Acts 2:42-47. And it reads, "They devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to the fellowship, to the breaking of bread and prayer. Everyone was filled with awe, and many wonders and miraculous signs were done by the apostles. All the believers were together and had everything in common. Selling their possessions and goods, they gave to anyone as he had need. Every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favor of all the people, and the Lord added to their number daily." The early church lived in a circle of love, caring for each other, helping each other, teaching, sharing, and eating all together. We do all of that in our RJ sessions, although we have no food. We feed and nurture each other in our spiritual lives, and we grow together. We bond. At that point, we experience a deeper understanding of our common humanity. This is a healing circle. Our family used a circle process to plan a wedding. The whole family and the groom's family were all involved. We shared what we would like to eat, where we would like to have the reception, what music we would like, and all the details. Everyone had an opportunity to give input, and then we decided, as a group, which pieces we would keep and which ones we would let go. Everyone got something they wanted, just not everything they wanted. Maintaining relationship is the working principle and the goal, just as in the church. We handled some family difficulties in the same way, and there was so much love shown to each person, especially to the one in our family who had caused a serious problem for all of us. If you remember nothing else I say today, please remember these two truths. Love wins always. Love wins always. And grace is never wasted. I heard in our songs today some of those messages. You know, there's all kinds of communities, and there are small communities and large communities. We know that in our churches, both of our churches are small churches. Our prime model for community is God. God is community, three persons in one. Each has a separate place in the Godhead, a special place, and they work together as a team to create one God. We really don't have language for such an entity, but we understand that somehow the three in one works perfectly and provides all we need for a life of spiritual oneness with God and others. Another model for community is Jesus and the disciples, Jesus and the 12. I can picture them sitting together around a fire, listening to each other share while eating and praying together as a community. And then we have the early church that I just read about, which gives such a perfect picture of a healthy community. They ate together, shared God's word together, prayed together, helped together. I just read it. You heard it. It just sounds like a loving place to be. So community is the basis for building and maintaining relationships. And that is what we do in RJ. Restorative justice is now used all over the world in many places, such as in schools and businesses, in countries like South Africa with the apartheid issue, and to bring healing in Rwanda after the genocide. It's used in families and, of course, in the prison. I've witnessed healing as a result of our workshops. And one note here, any names that I mention are changed due to confidentiality. I remember one man who, after 5 or 6 weeks, just seemed resistant to the process of letting go of his old ideas. Khalil was focusing on his old way of thinking, such as blaming others and not seeing his need to take responsibility for his actions, looking at the very skewed justice system and feeling wronged by it rather than focusing on what he did to get into the prison. All of the other men in the group had begun to understand how their criminal activity had impacted not only their victims, but also his own family and the larger community. But at the end of the sixth session, the leader asked us to close by going around the circle and sharing something they had learned about the RJ process to take with them that night. When it was Khalil's turn to speak, his voice cracked and he said, "I get it. I finally get it." He went on to give thanks for the program and said he was looking forward to learning more about how to be a different person on the inside of his heart and on the inside of the prison. And that was the night that we truly became one, a whole bonded community. And it was truly a beautiful moment. I have seen the men in our groups wipe away tears, heard their stories of their cruel parents and of living their childhoods in dangerous places, such as drug dens and devastating poverty, of feeling hurt over how they had hurt someone else, and on and on. They have shown each other and me, an outsider, their humanity, their pain, their sorrow, and how God must beam with joy at such transformation. God is just waiting for us to plug into the joy that God has for us. Jeremiah 29:11-14 says, For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you a hope and a future. Then you will call upon me and come and pray to me, and I will listen to you. You will seek me and find me when you seek me with all your heart. I will be found by you, declares the Lord, and you will will bring you back from captivity. I will gather you from all the nations and places where I have banished you, declares the Lord, and will bring you back to the place from which I carried you into exile. This is the reason that you didn't know this, but I named this particular sermon From Captivity to Freedom, because this is one of the things that comes out of our RJ process. Jeremiah says we are promised a hope and a future and being brought back from captivity. I watch these men who are still in captivity, who are completely under the control of their captors, who have been stripped of every dignity, and who find a glimmer of hope as they gather together in a series of 11 Thursday evenings or in alumni workshops or whole weekend workshops to share their hearts and hear the stories of other imprisoned men. The goal of RJ is transformation through learning to respect one another, to form trusting relationships, and to be individually and corporately responsible. And isn't that what we long for in the church and in all of our relationships? And this doesn't mean that there are no conflicts. It simply means that you use the group process and share in respectful ways what you are feeling and what you need from each other. And when you are not of one mind, you then agree to disagree agreeably. You do not allow your inability to agree to cause a disintegration of relationships. You merely love the other person where he or she is, as he is, as she is, and allow the issue to rest and simply love one another anyway. As I mentioned before, all of the RJ principles are Christ-centered. We have a number of Muslims and some folks from other faith backgrounds, as well as non-believers in our groups. It is a beautiful thing to watch people come together and share about their lives and not have divisive issues come up about differences of belief, of religious belief. We agree in the beginning to allow people to be who they are and expect the same in return. It's quite refreshing, actually. Love can grow in this fertile ground of acceptance. When hearts are softened, God can then work. Rigid rules and personal absolutes can cause division, where openness can allow for people to come to truth on their own. After all, God is love. God can make a way if we simply love and then get out of the way. What have I seen happen to the men at the prison? Well, astounding things, and I wish I could tell you all of them. And I'm sure Jake was there a lot longer than I was. He has some wonderful stories too. I remember one man named John share in a group of 18 men that he had been beaten mercilessly by his own mother until one day he nearly died. She was on drugs and he was only 8 or 9 years old. Eventually he turned to drugs and his lifestyle cycled down as he joined a gang to survive in the inner city. Men in a prison setting generally do not share their stories or their fears or feelings with other men in the prison. They remain aloof and distant, and some keep a surly, tough-looking exterior as a barrier to hide behind. They do not want to appear weak among strangers. But in RJ, these men are bearing their souls to strangers and to a woman from the outside. When one man shared his hurt, I saw the faces of the other men change. They had all been looking down at the floor, but upon hearing his words, they looked up to him. Some men shook their heads or nodded in a knowing fashion. Others looked kindly at him with a softening glance that said, "It's okay, man." The men around him patted his back. He had tears in his eyes. That one man broke open the group, and the sharing went to a much deeper level after that and continued for the rest of the 11 weeks. In my 30 years of leading and directing small group process, I learned a very important truth about why vulnerability is essential to a group's process. And that truth is, a small group will become as intimate or vulnerable as the person who shares the least. So therefore, getting these men to open up helps us to move the healing process along more quickly. After all, we only get 11 weeks with each workshop to work this miracle that God does in transformation. In these groups, we have cried together and had some sad moments, but we have also shared some joys, as when one of the men we knew had been able to go home to his family after serving 40 years in prison for a crime he did not commit. And the best times are when we laugh together. Silly things, usually. My one son calls them location jokes, meaning you have to have been there to understand. You know how certain things are funny to you and your spouse or to you and your best friend? Well, these guys are beginning to trust each other enough to let their guard down and laugh over silly things. For instance, one of our exercises in the beginning has each person saying what three things they do each day, and they cannot repeat what anyone else has said. They say things like, I pray, I wash, I talk on the phone. Or, I go to work, I comb my hair, I exercise. Of course, the men down at the end, they're thinking, what am I going to say? They're taking everything. So I try to help them out in each group because I'm the only woman. So I say things like, well, I draw on my eyebrows, I put on my lipstick, and I spray my hair with hairspray, because none of them are going to be using that, probably. So they always laugh, and it sounds kind of silly and foreign to their lifestyle, and it just seems funny. But remember, silly laughter. Now, I'm not talking about the kind that makes fun of other people, but silly laughter can draw people together. I can see in my mind's eye Jesus sitting with the disciples, perhaps around a fire or in a boat fishing, but I see them sitting around and sharing funny stories or teasing each other. That's kind of a fun thought when I remember that Jesus is human. I also share with the men about some of the difficulties in my own life and about issues in my early years. I let them know that I had suffered abuse, that I had a son who went to prison, that I had a brother who died of alcohol abuse. This helps them to know that I get what it is to have experienced deep suffering in my life. And this makes it easier for them to share the deep hurts that they have. I have to tell you that I feel closer to God on Thursday nights when I'm in the prison than I often do on Sunday mornings when I am at church. And that has nothing to do with my church. I have a wonderful church. But something happens when I walk through the prison door, and it happened from the very first day. I walk in feeling a presence moving with me. I have this warm fullness within me, as though my heart is so full of love that it just needs to spill over on others. Perhaps it's because greater need needs greater love. And God uses people like me and people like you to take God's love to others. Do you have something you'd like to share?
Yeah, just think about some things.
Come up so everybody can hear you.
And we would like to have questions for you as well.
Oh, okay.
So take time for it. The Bible is full of scriptures about prison and the captives, and just a couple like Matthew 25. Jesus said, "Don't forget those in prison if you were a fellow prisoner." And that, I just, as I read the Bible, I see how concerned God is about people that are incarcerated. And as Sandra read one last week, what does the Lord require? To act justly, to love mercy, and walk humbly before your God. And even the bulletin today, if you read that little verse on there about what is justice without restoration, and where would any of us be without grace? And I think about that thin line that, I'm outside the prison, but my lifestyle, or when I was younger, I could have ended up in prison. And that thin line, and I think about a lot of the stories, like Bobby says, of the guys. I mean, in one of our pastures, we had a doctor in there, a medical doctor who got hooked on prescription drugs and ended up selling drugs, and he was ended up in Graterford, a doctor. And another guy who was a banker, right, and he embezzled money. And then you find out his story that his mother was a crack addict, and him and his brother would take care of her when they were like 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 years old. And just some of the stories. And you really get to see why these guys end up in there. You know their life, and then we talk about generational curses, and this thing like in the inner cities especially, where you know there's generations of incarceration. I remember early on one of the groups there was a grandfather, a father, and a son that were all in Graterford at the same time. We're really fortunate. And I also, one thing I noticed, and I know Bobby agrees with this, is the intelligence of a lot of these guys. I mean, the one guy that's in charge of RJ, some of you write to him, I mentioned because you know his name, Phil. If Phil wasn't in, he's doing life. If he wasn't a lifer, he'd probably be the CEO of some large company. And the other guy, Charles, everybody knows, is Charles would be a pastor or a counselor or something. That's his heart, you know. And you just see these men, and people say, well, I say that to people, I can't believe how intelligent some of these guys are. And I say, well, they can't be that smart if they're in there. But again, it goes back to that thin line of, you know what I mean? That thin line where God's grace has spared us their life, you know. And that's another thing I often think about is, the guys doing life. I mean, when Bobby and I walk out of there, I seem to have a heavy feeling for the men that are in there for the rest of their lives. Like Bobby said, death by incarceration. And you just see, you know, and even the guys will say, there's bad people that need to be in prison. But a lot of these guys have turned their lives around. And you just see that white life being where they could be somebody on the outside. They could be helping people on the outside because of what they went through, and to be in there for the rest of your life. It's sad, you know, it's sad. And I give them credit for the guys who find a purpose, a higher purpose in the prison. And they don't just, you know, like, woe is me kind of thing. The system's against me. That's what kind of like Bobby said, that's part of our program is to have people see their lives and their life in prison and what they've done and turn it in a different direction. So I think that's probably it, Bobby.
Thanks, Jake.
But thank you. Thank you, Bobby. And some questions.
Let me finish, okay, because I still have... Do you have time if I finish?
Yes.
From time to time, as I make my way around the prison, I see former group members in the hallways, and I think Jake would agree that that's fun for us. They only have a few minutes to move. They call it their moving time, and they can't stop and talk to us, but we pass in the hallways, and we do fist bumps and high fives, and we wave, and we yell, hello, how are you? And we smile, always big smiles. And they need to know that they are not forgotten or that they're people thrown away like trash. Some of them never have visitors because they didn't really have a support system on the outside. So we're it. Those of us who go in to volunteer in the many different ways are often it for them. One thing I noticed early on is that most of the imprisoned men are men of color. In our groups, we may have one white man in each group. All of the other men, even the group leaders, are black or brown. And I won't delve into the unfairness of that now, but it is something for you to think about as you go home today. Some folks even call this modern-day lynching, mass incarceration. So whatever we call it, it doesn't feel like justice to me. The other night, I watched Matt after a meeting for 8 weeks, and Suddenly, I watched him connect the dots and come alive to the process. Matt is an old gray-haired man, beaten constantly as a child, left to the streets at age 8, and had been in jail most of his life. He looked up from the spot on the floor he had been watching through the whole meeting. I think this was the night you missed. You didn't see this. He had barely spoken for all these weeks, but he said, "Bobby, I want to ask you a question." He looked me right in the eyes. Well, he hadn't even given eye contact for the whole time. We don't talk to each individual person. We talk to the group when we speak. So, but he had never indicated that he was a part of the process. So I had to affirm him. So I chose to look at him and say, "What was it that you wanted to say, Matt?" Well, Matt asked if restorative justice were being used throughout the legal system at any level. And I knew that what Matt was saying was that he now believed in the process and wanted to know if it were being encouraged elsewhere. So how did he know it was a good process? Well, he knew because he had been changed in his own heart. And this is the kind of transformation that feels so miraculous and keeps us going back week after week and month after month and year after year. RJ is truly changing lives. And when I see it happen, I am so delighted. It's miraculous. Some of the men grew up in prison. They committed their crimes as teenagers, even merely 14 or 15 years old. They are now 45 or 50 years of age or older, and they're completely different people than they were 30 or so years ago, just as Jake just mentioned. They could be living among us, working, paying taxes, and using their many gifts to improve our world. They are artists and musicians. Some have earned their college degrees, and many have learned a trade as they work in the many prison jobs. All of this potential is lost to the world as they live the rest of their lives behind bars. And my heart breaks when I see the very old blind man who is being escorted by another imprisoned man who is holding his arm and gently guiding him down a hallway. That blind man lives in two prisons. I feel such compassion when I watch Isaac leave our group meeting pushing Naheem in his wheelchair. Naheem has been in his chair for many years from a gunshot wound to his back. Another man named Lonnie sits with the sick and dying as his ministry. How beautiful and uplifting to see the many kindnesses that these men are offering each other. Love is at work, even in the prison. And when I walk into the prison on any given Thursday evening or Saturday morning or over the weekend, I take the fullness of Christ with me and an extra measure of patience to tolerate the 45-minute process of entering from the time I get there until we actually get inside. We're admitted through sally ports, which are holding areas with locked doors at either end. You cannot move through one metal doorway until the doorway behind you is unlocked or locked, and there are a series of 6 different locked doors, 3 or 4 sally ports. I proceed through a metal detector, which involves removing things from my pockets, taking off my shoes, placing anything metal like my earrings into a box, just like at the airport, and having nothing on me except just one car key and our lanyard with our volunteer badge. I push my walker through. Yes, I walk with a walker because the hallways are extremely long. We even go outside now and go through another door to get to another building. I push the walker through the detector, then I put my shoes through, and then I walk through myself. I sign a visitor sheet on which I write my name, my car make, the time I entered. I hold out my right arm to have the wristband secured in place. In one sally port, I hold my badge against another scanner and place my finger on the bio scan to show that I am permitted entry. I wait in another line to have my hands checked for drugs by an ion scan. It's quite a journey, isn't it, Jake? I was denied entry one night from the drug scan, by the way. I probably had a chemical on my hands, or perhaps I touched a doorway, and there may have been drugs on the door. There are all kinds of humbling and mortifying experiences that visitors and volunteers go through to get into the prison. but I find every inconvenience worth the work that I do. The saddest thing is seeing little children coming to visit their fathers or their uncles or their siblings. They go through the metal detectors the same as we do, and it's truly heartbreaking. Mass incarceration is a harsh existence meant for punishment only, with little thought to true rehabilitation. Also, it does nothing for the victims, which includes us as a community. We pay for this over and over again. Mass incarceration is all about making money, not about ending harm and producing healing in the world. The bottom line is this: the more people who go to prison, the more money that is made. There is little incentive to draw down on the prison population. Lobbyists for the moneymakers get the ear of the politicians to keep the prison system as it is, and the general public believes their rhetoric about how criminals should be dealt with. I think that is why they make it so hard for volunteer programs to get into the prison. We see what is wrong, and we attempt to create change, and change is scary to the status quo. I read recently that some of Pennsylvania prisons were closing, and instead of rejoicing that not so many people were going to prison, the article spoke of the loss of revenue. Now, have these men done wrong and bad things? Yes, most of them have. Should there be consequences for their actions? Of course. For every action, there is a reaction. Consequences are real. I'm not suggesting that there should be no repercussion for wrongdoing. I am simply reminding all of us that God loves everyone, and everyone is invited to redemption and reconciliation and restoration by God, even the murderer in the jail, even the person who sells drugs, even the person who cheats on his taxes, even the woman who sells her body, and the man who buys it, and even the person who makes false insurance claims, and so on. However, none of that evil has anything to do with love. We can love our child even though our child breaks one of our rules or even breaks the law. God wants us to love others the way we love our children, and most importantly, the way God loves us. And God's love is respectful, redeeming, and restorative. We read in 1 John that God is love. Genesis 1:27 tells us that we are made in the image of God, the Imago Dei. And if that's true, I carry the love of God wherever I go. Restorative justice is simply one place to do that, to help people feel accepted, important, and safe. And the act of godly loving produces this fertile ground for the transforming power of Christ in each person's life. I shall remember always a young man named I'm going to say T.L. His final words at the end of one of our meetings, the last meeting, was, "I love this group. I love you guys. I now have real friends. This is awesome. This is awesome." I ran into this young man a week ago Saturday at an alumni workshop. He was continuing in his journey towards wholeness by taking all of the programs he could. He has discovered a pathway to freedom. I hold conflicted feelings in my heart over this man. I feel joy because RJ has made a difference in his life, but at the same time, I feel sorrow over the lost potential of a boy named TL. He would remain a captive physically for the rest of his life, but one consolation is that he has found freedom to love and be loved. Now, how can we use restorative justice process in our lives? I suggest as a person in community with others, you consider this. Is there a person in your life that you know you're withholding love from? Is there somebody that you no longer speak to? Do you avoid somebody? Has someone hurt you and you're finding it hard to forgive? Each of us has at least one person who annoys us or hurts us or makes us uncomfortable when they are around us. Just think of that person now. Who's that person in your life? Can you find a way to bridge the gap and show them kindness and forgiveness. And will doing so help you be free and help remove the barrier in your relationship? Could you have an open and honest conversation with that person? That's what we do at RJ. We have open and honest conversations. People could come together and speak and be heard to say anything as long as you're saying it in a respectful and open way and keep the goal of wanting to preserve relationship. These are all good things to think about as we start moving toward healthy relationships and to improving community life, whether it is home life, your work life in your larger community, your church life, or in a prison. And I'm going to tell you one last thing. I'm going to read you a diary journal that I wrote. I type it into my computer. I wrote this in my diary on January 27th, 2018. It was the day of my 75th birthday. At the end of last night's, this is the quote, at the end of last night's restorative justice workshop with 14 men at Greater Fort Prison, I made a little announcement. I explained that in these later years, I enjoy giving to others on my birthday, and it would have been my joy to bring them homemade cookies, a cake or cookies, something sweet to eat, so together we could celebrate my 75th birthday. Instead, I shared with them some mottos or inspirational thoughts that I have found beneficial in my own life. I typed them on little slips of paper for them to choose one. I thought they would take these little pearls of truth and quickly move out to their cells as they do every other Thursday evening. Not so this night. I looked around the circle and saw 14 bright ear-to-ear smiles, and then several of them turned towards me and asked my permission to sing me happy birthday. That they wanted to respond to my gift to them with a sign of their joy filled me with such warmth, and tears popped into my eyes. One of the men, who is the ultra extrovert and definitely a leader, yelled out, "I want to sing the hip hop rendition." And so they did, singing the same tune we all know, but with a festive flair that truly made me feel like dancing. Instead, I raised my arm as they sang and twirled it to the rhythm of their singing, which grew louder and louder until it ended. And as each man shook my hand upon leaving, so many said that they should have been giving a gift to me instead of my wanting to give to them. Little did they know that they did give to me in ways that were intangible. As I drove home, I wondered if these men, who had been incarcerated for decades, have had the opportunity to share such moments since their youth, a time when, as a group, they joined together and sang happy birthday to another person, joyfully and from their hearts. That thought helped me to see again how much we on the outside take for granted." Unquote. So remember this, every ripple, positive or negative, goes out into eternity and impacts the world at large. So for the good of the world and to promote love everywhere, let us send out positive ripples of loving kindness on the sea of life. If the men in the maximum security prison called Phoenix can be transformed, there is hope for us all. Amen.
Any questions?
Yes, Kim.